He is one of South Africa's top labor lawyers. He's a politician and member of parliament. And now you can access Michael Bagrum as he talks law and life on High FM. Join Michael Bagrum at 6 p.m. for Bagrum on Law and Life, 101.9 High FM, 101.9 megahertz of life and law.
Thank you, everyone. Thank you for tuning in tonight. It's Michael Bagrum on our special show we have every Tuesday evening between 6 and 7 p.m. Please contact us. Contact High FM and tell us who you want to hear from, what topics you want to hear. We've had unbelievable guests over the last few months. It's been absolutely fantastic. And we've got a wonderful guest here this evening. But like I always do, every time before I even open our show and introduce our guest, I normally are delving into one book or another during the current week. And I have been at loggerheads over the last few weeks with the fight between COSATU, the umbrella trade union body, and SAFTU, the breakaway umbrella trade union body. And I went back to a book that I'd read a few years back, in fact, quite a many years back, a book called The Battle for COSATU. It was an insider's view, and it was authored by Patrick Craven, of course, is one of the doyens of the trade union movement, and in particular COSATU. He came from a background of the Communist Party, and he had written this book just before the breakup of COSATU. It was very interesting how it happened. The book was written in 2016. So you can see how things have progressed since then. It's actually a beautiful book to read because it gives you the inside thinking of COSATU and the problems. And we've all seen the problems where COSATU has been controlling the ANC over many years. In fact, had a large part of controlling government. So I recommend anyone who's interested in trade union history and politics in South Africa, I do recommend the Patrick Craven book, The Battle for COSATU. He's no favorite of mine, but it certainly is worth reading. So just a point that you can get someone else's point of view and from the inside of COSATU, which has always been a powerful organization. It's losing a lot of its clout today, and we're seeing them losing a lot to SAFTU. And, of course, with the dwindling employment in South Africa, we're at over 40% unemployment. You can see how their members are dropping, and they're running out of money. So very interesting and worthwhile. Okay, so this evening I've got someone wonderful to introduce you to. You, it's Advocate Paul Hoffman, SC. He writes that he's a native of Johannesburg and a Wits graduate, which is sad for him. And he practiced law at the sidebar for a couple of years, from 1975 to 1980. And that's when I came on the scene in Cape Town in the early 80s as a young article clerk at the time. And at the time, I happened to meet up with Paul Hoffman, then not an SC, also, I think, reasonably junior advocate at the time. And before he took Silk, which was in 1995, I went to him before we actually had labor law, proper labor law in the country. And Paul led me through a case. Absolutely extraordinary. I was given a chance to represent the Mount Nelson Hotel at the time. We'll talk a little bit about that, but that's part of my history with Paul. So I've known him since basically when he came to the Cape Bar as an advocate, a young advocate. And as I said, in 95, he took Silk. He also acted on the Cape Bench. He said at the invitation of three successive judges president. I don't want to ask who the last one was because that's a bit embarrassing, but he has now retired from the bar, and he's the founding director for the Center of Constitutional Rights and co-founder in 2009 of Accountability Now. Now, I think most of our listeners, our audience this evening, will know about Accountability Now. You've been very busy directing and putting out opinions, putting out statements, letters to Business Day, letters to all and sundry. Been an incredibly busy guy. Probably the worst retirement I can think of, because I don't think you've had your fingers still for 1 second. But you've been dealing with all sorts of work and irregularities during your term of office as an advocate, the arms deal, the Hawks, the cartel case, the bread cartel case. I found that one absolutely fascinating. What I can't understand is that you do yoga. I know yogurt, but not yoga. So I can't understand that. But I know that you're living in Noorduk, which is the southern tip of the Cape Town community. And there you go on mountain walks and beach walks, and you are at least getting a little bit of rest and recreation. I know that you've written many articles, many books. I think it's about 4 books now. I'm not sure, but I know, too, that I have. I've got Confronting the Corrupt, which was written by you, and Countering the Corrupt, which, in fact, was handed out to us at Parliament, believe it or not. I managed to get my copy. So Paul Hoffman, SC, Advocate Paul Hoffman, welcome to our show. Thank you ever so much for giving up of your time. And I really appreciate you speaking openly on Chai FM and speaking to me as your host this evening. Just tell us a little bit about your background, your move from Johannesburg, and your choice to come to the Cape Bar in 1980.
Oh, well, I actually came to Cape Town in 1975, but I did that to beat the rush. And the rush has occurred since then. But just for the sake of accuracy, if you live in Noorduk, you have to do yoga because it's compulsory in the deep south. You know, we all wear flat sandals and woolen underwear and stuff like that. So the alternative existence down here keeps me strong enough to A, walk my dogs, and B, tickle the keys on my laptop in order to keep the stream of commentary going, and in order to focus attention on the lack of accountability in South Africa. That's really what keeps me busy. And this week, we've managed through doggedness to get Seth and Ty SC convicted on a charge of corruption. He eventually
Well done. I didn't know that. Okay. I'm learning now. Yeah. I had no idea that happened. Well done on that. I know you've been working on it, so well done.
Thank you.
You've had an enormous amount of interest, and before I go backwards into because I think the audience would love to hear about the particular case where I got involved in the labor law in the very first instance, but you've had a long time looking at policing, looking at the structures. You've run some groundbreaking court cases on this. And why I was so keen to have you on air tonight was to somehow share with us a little bit of the confusion, the panic of that famous interview 2 weeks ago now with the police commissioner. He is a commissioner, isn't he? I think he was a commissioner.
He's the leader of the most senior policeman in KZN. We're talking about General Mkhwanazi.
Ah, it's a general. Okay.
I got bad news for you. You lost a week somewhere because he did his thing on the 6th of July. And
oh, wow. Okay. I really have. Yeah. I was so shocked, I must admit, when I saw it. I almost fell out of my seat. And so we're going to lead up to that, and we must leave some time to discuss that and where it's going from here. And then also I wanted to discuss the private members bill put together by Advocate Glynis Breitenbach. And I know you've been doing a lot of research into that, and I know you've been pushing it quite hard to make sure we have some responsive policing. So that I want to leave enough time for that. But I just want to go backwards a bit because I joined a legal firm. I think it was in 1980-81, I joined a legal firm, Sonnenberg, Hoffman & Golombek in Cape Town. I wasn't cut out to be a lawyer, quite frankly. It looked like a lot of paperwork, and I wasn't an accountant. And at the time, I remember my boss, Dave Newrick, telling us that we've got to fill in fee forms every half hour and account for which client we've been speaking to and fill in the fee form. Yeah, I mean, I couldn't actually believe it. I remember telling one of my friends who was also doing articles at the time, I said to him, listen, I've just been to the toilet. Who should I bill? But the bottom line is, I wasn't sort of cut out for this, and I think they recognized it at Sonnenberg's that I'm a little bit of a sort of frayed at the edges, as it were, and me being a difficult character at the best of times, there was this new type of law that was coming in. We didn't really have much on it, but it was coming in with employee rights. You remember, this is the height of apartheid. Things were getting very difficult in South Africa at the time. I remember going, in fact, twice a week to the past courts. They weren't courts. I think they were sort of municipal tribunals. And I remember we were just going there to sort of steam up the system, as it were. And we never got anyone off. But what we did do is that when the magistrate had 40 cases set for the day, I don't think they were magistrates. I think they were commissioners at the time. He had 40 cases of past law breaches. But if you defended one, he could only do about five of those cases. The others had to be let go. The law was still reasonably respected in apartheid, and they had to let the other people go. And that's what we were there for. It was horrible for me to tell my client that you're the scapegoat. You're the person that's actually going to go to jail, but I'm going to manage to get 15 or 20 of your colleagues to go home. And that's what we were doing. And I couldn't do that all the time, because obviously that was rote work and I was supposed to learn something during my articles. So they said, you're going to do some admin law. I wasn't even sure what it was at the time. And you're going to go to those new labor tribunals. They were called conciliation boards. And there was a new body that was coming onto the scene at the time, was also the forerunner to the CCMA. And we have a client called the Mount Nelson Hotel, which we all know about in Cape Town. And they had had trouble with one of their mates. I think it was the head steward in the kitchen and waiter. And he had... he was reporting to the maitre d', I think it was Mr. Chance.
He was the manager. Mr. Chance was the manager. Chance.
Okay.
And the applicant in the case made the grave capital error of serving Mr. Chance's guests at the dinner table with a piece of silverware. Fish. Well, it was stainless steel, actually. It should have been silverware, but it was stainless steel. So he used the wrong sauce boat. He used the kitchen sauce boat instead of the dining room sauce boat. And that was regarded by the Mount Nelson as grounds for firing him. And that's where we came in.
Which, in fact, was an absolutely fascinating story, because I read in one of the labor law journals a few years thereafter, our case was recounted in the Journal for Students, and the heading was, As Chance Would Have It, which I found fascinating as well. I think I've kept it somewhere. I must send it to you again. But we arrived there sort of not really knowing how this was going to work, whether, in fact, we had a case or not, because, I mean, you don't really fire someone, especially a shop steward, because they serve tartar sauce in this stainless steel dish as opposed to the silver one. I think you're still the proud owner of the stainless steel dish, or am I correct? Because I remember going to the Mount Nelson afterwards, after the case, where you were presented with this tartar sauce dish.
I asked for the silver one, but I got the stainless steel one.
Yeah, that's how bad we were. But I must
say,
I've
still got it. I've still got the stainless steel dish.
Good. Well, I'm pleased to hear that. And in fact, it wasn't guests of Mr. Chance. It was the owners. It was a lord, someone or other, who had arrived with a whole delegation of people, had arrived in Cape Town on the Union Castle and were having dinner, and this disastrous thing happened. I also remember as well that a tiny bit of this tartar sauce splashed onto Mrs. The Lord's wife's dress, which was disastrous. And in fact, that case became quoted all over, because you took a few almost technical points, which destroyed
the
case.
The way we won the case was that our opponent over-iced the pudding. and he called the union organizer, who was a lovely Cockney fellow called Ted Fraser. He used to play the bugle for the Cape Town Highlanders, but in his spare time, he was the union organizer for the Catering Workers Union. And he was there to prove that the Mount Nelson was discriminating against people who wanted to join the union, because the hotel was in the process of becoming unionized. And he told a couple of whoppers in his evidence in chief. And you, in your briefcase, had a nice tape recording, which Mr. Chance had made of him telling management that if he was looked after, he would look after management, and that he knew who the troublemakers on the staff were.
Okay,
the troublemakers were in court when I put it to him that he'd said these things. And of course, he couldn't possibly admit that he'd said them. So the end result of it was that they had to stop the case because their union organizer was going to be demonstrably a mendacious witness. And so the waiter concerned, Mr. Willard Nodlela, after whom a suburb out in Kryfontein or somewhere is actually named, Willard the waiter became Willard the union organizer, and peace reigned between the Mount Nelson and the union after that particular snort club.
I remember that. And in fact, Willard Nodlela became a very good friend of mine after that, and an inspector for the industry. He was appointed an inspector. I helped him draw up a CV after that case. We went to the Spur restaurant for lunch. About a year after the case, he looked up and he said he's still trying to find a job. And I said, why not become an inspector? The bargaining councils, industrial councils then were looking for inspectors, and he got appointed, and he popped into my offices from time to time. I think he's passed away. He was very ill at one stage about 10 years ago. I suspect he's passed away because I haven't heard from him since then. The whole idea of me telling the story with Advocate Paul Hoffman, SC, is to show that this man's had a long career. He's got an incredibly sharp mind, was willing to go into a case that was absolutely disastrous on paper, and yet we won it. And this is a man who's now taking on the system in all ways and means of taking on the system. If you can go backwards and tell us a little bit about the Glenister case, what people probably won't know and won't remember.
Yes, Bob Glenister was a Joburg, well, he still is a Joburg businessman who did not take kindly to the Scorpions being closed down. The listeners with long memories will recall that the Scorpions were a very efficient unit within the NPA back in the noughties. They were actually closed down in 2008. After Jacob Zuma swept to power at Polokwane in 2007, and the ANC passed a resolution calling upon cabinet urgently to disband the Scorpions and take away from the National Prosecuting Authority any investigative powers. So the idea was to split the enemy into investigators and prosecutors, and that way just run circles around the system. It was the first step with state capture, you could say. They were getting the institutions of state into a neutralized position so that Jacob Zuma and the Guptas and all of the tenderpreneurs and others involved in the debasement of the tender system, the procurement of goods and services for the state, became an opportunity to steal money or rip off a percentage for those involved in the bribery and corruption that was going on. And Glenister decided he was going to litigate this. And he got David Unterhalter to lead Alfred Cockerill in a challenge that he brought immediately the decision was announced. He was in court in no time at all. And Glenister won. That's
the first Glenister case, not W-O-N, but O-N-E, Glenister 1, found its way to the Constitutional Court in no time at all. And the Constitutional Court said, listen, Mr. Glenister, we know you don't like what the government is doing here, but we have to give the legislature and the executive an opportunity of considering this resolution that the ANC has passed, because it isn't the government, it's a political party. And if, when they are finished with whatever they do with this plan to close down the Scorpions, and you are still unhappy, you can come back again. But at this stage, we are not going to help you, and we're not going to order costs against you, because you're obviously doing what you're doing in a public-spirited fashion. It's public interest litigation of the best kind. Well, of course, there was a huge fight in Parliament. All the opposition parties opposed the idea of closing down the Scorpions, because they were hot on the trail of people like Jackie Salebi and Shabir Sheikh and Jacob Zuma himself. In fact, cases that were investigated by the Scorpions are still being pursued against Jacob Zuma, and may even come to trial one day before you and I are dead. So the...
Yeah, Zuma will outlive all of us.
Mr. Glenister was not happy with the outcome of, with the closure of the Scorpions, and he went back to court and said, this is unconstitutional. What has happened here is a debasement of a system of effective and efficient anti-corruption machinery of state. And to everybody's great surprise, 5 out of 9 judges hearing the case agreed with Mr. Glenister. The Chief Justice gave a very solid-looking minority judgment, which is called the main judgment in the law reports, because he dealt with all of the points in the case. And the majority wrote a joint judgment of Deputy Chief Justice Morsenecki and Justice Cameron, who's still in the news to this day. And they said that what is needed in South Africa is a body outside the control of the executive to effectively deal with corruption. And that body should be imbued with various characteristics, which I've turned into the stirrer's characteristics, because I'm a stirrer. I decided that we should use an acronym that was meaningful. And stirrer's really embodies the characteristics of a proper anti-corruption body. So it must be a body of specialists composed of trained experts who do nothing other than anti-corruption work. Anti-corruption and organized crime work is really much the same. What you're doing is dealing with people who commit crime in secret and deliberately in order to enrich themselves. It's the ultimate crime of greed. And the next characteristic of STIRS, so you've got the S for specialized and the T for trained. The main characteristic is that the institution in which these people work must be independent of the executive in its structure and in its operations. So the Minister of Police can have nothing to do with what they are busy with in their anti-corruption efforts. And if you think about it, Mr. Mchunu would have had no business giving instructions to the police to take all of those political murder dockets which are about corruption in politics, and to put them on Shadrach Sabir's desk. So that couldn't have happened if Glenister had been implemented. The R in STIRS stands for guaranteed resourcing. Now in Hong Kong they've got efficient anti-corruption machinery, and they decided they weren't going to have a debate every year about how much the anti-corruption commission in Hong Kong would get. It would simply be a percentage of the budget, whatever the budget happened to be. They would get their percentage, and they'd have to make do with that percentage. And it takes all It does, and it takes all the political hassle out of putting a foot on the oxygen pipe or siphoning the petrol out of the tank of the anti-corruption body. And then the thing that the Scorpions didn't have, the last S in STIRS, is secure tenure of office. And if you are able to do your job as a corruption buster without having to look over your shoulder the whole time to see whether you're going to get fired for doing it, or you're going to be persecuted in some way for doing it, then you are STIRS compliant all the way to the last S. So specialized, trained, independent, resourced, and secure. Those are the main characteristics of an anti-corruption body, which we have never had in South Africa.
Yeah, which of course the start of that was the Scorpions. They were getting there.
But unfortunately, they were still reporting to the police. Tenure of office.
Yeah, that's
it. They certainly regarded themselves as able to act without fear, favor, or prejudice, which is what the Constitution says in relation to the whole of the NPA. But acting without fear, favor, or prejudice means acting impartially. It doesn't necessarily mean acting independently. And the whole of the National Prosecuting Authority in South Africa is under the thumb of the Minister of Justice,
who has final responsibility
over the NPA.
Let me stop you here. We've got to pay the bill.
IFM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
So where we left off just before the ad break, we're talking to Paul Hoffman, Advocate Paul Hoffman, SC, the person who is confronting the corrupt, and he's written a book on that. We were talking about the demise of the Scorpions, and you're here with Michael Bagram, our show every Tuesday evening between 6 and 7. And please contact High FM if you want to hear any individual. We do hunt down people to come and talk to us. And, well, we've had a lot to do with the police and the police general in KwaZulu-Natal. And, of course, it's created a whole lot of havoc in the parliament itself. And, of course, within the whole police force. People are saying, well, if our minister can cause trouble, if our senior policeman can be corrupt, why do we as constables have to be as goody two shoes? So I'm hearing that every day in Parliament. So I asked Advocate Paul Hoffman to come on air with us this evening and just to help break down how we got here. How did we get to a corrupt police force? Unfortunately, a lot of senior people, a lot of people that we were suspicious of in the first place. And of course, now we've landed up eventually in a situation where the president has actually suspended the minister, the police minister, and we go from there. But we're going through the history, and if you could tell us a little bit, so Glenister is then approved, his case is approved, but it doesn't actually happen. Take us from there.
What in fact happened after that that seminal judgment in which the court said, we think that a... Well, what they said was binding on the government. They said that we need to have a body outside executive control and take away your hawks, your initial hawks legislation, and go and amend. Well, of course, that was the height of the Zuma era. The ANC had a majority in parliament, and there was no way that they were going to give faithful effect to the judgment that was given. So they took the initial Hawks legislation and they tweaked it to make it look as if the Hawks were not quite as under the thumb of the executive as they had been in their first incarnation. Because the Minister of Police is in even a stronger position than the Minister of Justice vis-a-vis the police, because he sets police policy and he's really in overall charge of the police, which is why Mchunu could say, please move all those dockets out of KZN and store them on the desk of Shadrach Sabir in Pretoria. That's because he is still actually in control of the Hawks, who are the police's anti-corruption specialist body. And so Some of the criteria were adhered to, but the main one, that a body outside executive control, an adequately independent body, was required. That just didn't happen. And the second incarnation of the Hawks was immediately attacked, not only by Glenister again, but also by the Helen Suzman Foundation. So when that case came to the Constitutional Court in 2014, David Unterhalter was by then acting for the Helen Suzman Foundation, and I was acting for Glenister, having appeared in the earlier one as a friend of the court. So in the first one as a friend of the court, in the second Glenister case, I was Glenister's counsel, and Unterhalter came for the Helen Suzman Foundation as a friend of the court. So we went back again to the Mokgweng court, and they agreed that a body, an adequately independent body, was required, but they did not fix the legislation in a way that actually complies with what Glenister 2 requires. And it was really a very fraught case, because what Glenister did in order to show that the Parliament and the Executive Cabinet had not made the reasonable decision of a reasonable decision maker in the circumstances, which is the test that was laid down in Glenister 2. That's what they were told to go away and do. He said, well, the circumstances in South Africa are such that everybody is corrupt. The politicians are corrupt, the police are corrupt, the prosecutors are corrupt, and that is why we need a body that is well insulated from political interference and well clear of the executive. Well, the judges didn't take kindly to that. They said that Mr. Glenister had overplayed his hand, that he was indulging in odious political posturing by bringing all of this evidence of how crooked everybody is. And he didn't succeed on that leg of the case. But he did succeed on the inadequacy of the legislation in relation to the Hawks, to the extent that it was tweaked again, this time by the court instead of by the legislature, which is quite unusual. Anyway, the upshot of it has been that the Hawks have been in position in their final incarnation since 2014, and they have not been a success at all. They are too much under the thumb of the police minister.
It's now 11 years, and we haven't had much. We've seen nothing come out of the Zondo Commission. It's quite sad, really.
Well, if you think about it, what Glenister put before the court in the Glenister 3 was really a preview of the evidence that was led in the Zondo Commission. Well, the things that he complained about all came out in the wash in the Zondo Commission of Inquiry, making it ever more apparent that a body outside executive control is what is really needed. Well, Cyril Ramaphosa became president in 2018, and he got himself a reputation of being a new broom sweeping clean, and that he was now going to fix the
new dawn.
The new dawn, new that dawn. That was going to be aimed at the renewal of the ANC and the cleaning up of corruption. And he formed by presidential proclamation a thing called the Investigating Directorate in the National Prosecuting Authority, which really it flies directly in the face of the idea that the body concerned should be outside of executive control. It's actually created by a presidential proclamation as a unit within the NPA, which is under the final responsibility of the Minister of Justice. So that didn't work. Now, in 2024, which was really only last year, he turned that investigating directorate into what we call IDAC these days, the Investigating Directorate Against Corruption, which is a body which is indistinguishable from the scorpions and suffers from the same disabilities that the scorpions had. A, it's part of the NPA. B, it does not enjoy independence from the executive. C, it has no specialists in anti-corruption work. D, its personnel are not trained as they should be. And E, it does not have sufficient resources. F, it's not a not body secure. That has secure tenure of office.
Can I take you back a little bit, just a little bit? In 2014, Breitenbach comes to Parliament after having her own internal fight in the prosecution authority, which stemmed a lot with people telling her who she can't prosecute at the time. No, you might recall that.
Yes. Yeah. She wanted to be an independent prosecutor, and she wasn't allowed to be because of the way that the ANC likes to run the country. Yeah. And in fact, she's been in Parliament since about 2014.
Yeah, she came and sat next. We were the two backbenchers. I sat next to Glynis because we were parachuted in, the babies, as it were, although much older than most, but the babies of the Parliament sitting there. And I remember sitting talking to her because they tried to sue her as well and landed
they
up
did,
in court.
They did sue her.
Yeah, and she won the case.
And came second.
Yeah, correct.
She left the NPA under the unhappiest of circumstances, but the business of persuading Glynis that the NPA should not be seized with the prosecution of the corrupt took me several years. She only came around to my way of thinking in about 2022, when we put together draft legislation for a Chapter 9 anti-corruption body. We called it the Integrity Commission. And Glynis has been converted, if you like, to the thinking in Glenister 2, to the Mosoneke-Cameron judgment, which is the law. It's still binding law to this day that a body outside executive control is required. And she accepts now that although the Constitution enjoins the prosecution to act without fear, favor, or prejudice, that really means to act impartially and doesn't necessarily mean to act independently. And that independence is impossible when you have a Minister of Justice who has final responsibility over the prosecuting authority, which is exactly what Section 179 of the Constitution says. So the amendment that is necessary to bring about an anti-corruption body that is outside executive control involves changing Chapter 9 to create a new Chapter 9 institution, which she has called the Anti-Corruption Commission. And it's not a commission of inquiry. It's a statutory standing commission with proper teeth. A commission of inquiry is just a tool of the executive branch of government.
Yeah, that's a talk shop, yeah.
Absolutely. And its findings are not binding, and its recommendations are the take-it-or-leave-it kind of recommendations. That's
now, we will be bringing MP Breitenbach to talk on this station in a few weeks' time. But it's important for you to show how it all fits together. I'd like to, we haven't got an enormous amount of time left, and I could speak for weeks about this with you. It's been fascinating for me, but I'd like you to take us now to this. First of all, Glynis has put together a private members bill. You've seen that and you've endorsed it. And I've seen from various pieces of correspondence that I get from all over that you've been endorsing that and pushing for it. Very strongly, and I thank you for that, because I think we do need an independent body and adequately resourced, and people who don't need to be scared that they're going to get fired because they've angered so-and-so. So I agree with all that, and I'm sure Glynis will endorse that as well, because that's a private member's bill. But I want to move on and talk a little bit about what's happened now in recent days with the, well, you said more than 2 weeks ago. things can happen. I often hear people saying politics, a day in politics is far too long. But okay, this is about 6 weeks ago now. Just take us, what was shocking about that and where is that going? I've seen you've written a lot about it recently.
Yeah. Look, going back to the 6th, where Nkwenazi puts on his special uniform and lines the conference room with masked and armed policemen. He was making a statement. He was saying, this is what I want out in the open. And if you think you can come and kill me for saying so, try and get past my bodyguards. That was really the message, loud and clear. It worried.
It looked
a lot.
Like he had a dozen military officers surrounding him at the time. It was quite scary. Yeah.
No. It was definitely a very strong statement. Now, whether he was doing that because he is himself corrupt, I cannot say. But certainly, it was a bold move either way, and it's led to every branch of government becoming involved in the fallout of his revelations during that happy Sunday morning when he revealed what he had to say in relation to his dockets being taken away because of corruption in high places, in the police, in the judiciary, in the executive, all over the show.
So, there's been, just to stop you at that point, there's been quite a lot of argument on the contrary where your namesake, Paul O'Sullivan, has not been happy with Nkwenazi for various reasons.
Yes. He says he's a baddie. Yeah. In fact, Ethel Trollope is threatening to sue O'Sullivan for injuria and defamation and all sorts of relief because they are on opposite sides of the argument on that. And
we can't take it at face value what anyone says.
No, I'm an agnostic about happening. It because it's quite possible that this was a preemptive move on the part of Nkwenazi. Some people say he's in trouble with tenderpreneurism himself. I don't know if that's true. It will come out in the Madlanga Commission of Inquiry. If it doesn't come out before then, in the ad hoc committee, which the police and the justice portfolio committees in the National Assembly have put together and are wanting to do the work during the current recess of Parliament. You are meant to be on holiday, but if you happen to be on that ad hoc committee, you've got your work cut out for you.
Well, it's not actually a holiday. We're doing our constitutional duty.
Yeah, constituency work.
We're doing constituency work, so we're doing oversight. So, in fact, this morning I had a visit to the Department of Employment and Labour, who weren't happy to see me because only one counter out of 16 was actually open. So
they weren't expecting you.
Yeah. No, they certainly wasn't. And I was wearing mufti, so they had no idea who I was. And I said, I need to jump the queue to get in. I want to see what's going on. They stopped me at the gate. I then had to pull out my tag and to say I'm actually doing an oversight visit. And the guards didn't understand what that was all about. Despite the fact that I've been down there 100 times in the last 11 years to check them out, they obviously change guards every now and again, probably more frequent than the King of England. But the changing of the guards eventually let me in, and the word hadn't got out to the inside. So we're doing our constituency work, and I know that all my colleagues are doing constituency work, all undercover. We're all wearing different clothes. So it's interesting, but of course, while we're talking over here, I know the police are in enormous disarray. And in fact, the portfolio committee that you're talking about with Glynis and police and justice, they're doing an enormous amount of work. And while you're unpacking this interview that took place, we can only call it an interview, but I think it was quite a revelation, quite frankly, because it doesn't matter who's guilty. What it does show is the police are in disarray. So you've heard O'Sullivan attack the policeman. You've heard others attack the minister. of police. It's a weird situation. Also, maybe you can comment on this, but the minister himself has not been removed, which is the president's prerogative to remove him, but he's put him on some sort of garden leave where he still receives his full salary. Plus, we've got another individual who stood in as the minister in the meantime, and then we've got a third individual who's going to come in as the new minister. So it looks like we've got almost three people on ministerial payroll at the moment. Can you make head or tail of
what's going on? Only one ministry, but three leaders, yes. The temporary acting, the acting, and the actual. And,
and they're all receiving salary.
Yeah, well,
as from tomorrow, 1st of August, all three receive salary.
Yeah. Now, that issue was argued, along with the issue of whether it's rational to appoint a commission of inquiry, which is Cyril Ramaphosa has done two things in relation to this whole performance. He's announced that Deputy Chief Justice Modlanga, who's on the point of retiring, will chair a commission of inquiry, which will be along the lines of the Zondo Commission of Inquiry, but it won't be into state capture. It will be into capture of the police and the corruption that Mkhwanazi alleges.
It'll also be a little bit cheaper than a billion rand. I think it's only quarter of a billion or something, I think.
In my way of thinking, Modlanga would be well advised to say, please look at the judgment in Glenister 2, create the independent anti-corruption machinery of state and let it get on with its job. Leave me out of it because I've got no executive powers. I've got no investigative powers like a policeman would have. And I'm not prepared to get too involved in the nitty gritty here because it's something we've seen it with Zondo. Zondo made prima facie findings against all sorts of people. It's come to nothing because in a commission of inquiry, you don't dig in deep enough to prove facts beyond a reasonable doubt. In a criminal prosecution, you're required to do that if you want to secure a conviction. So there's duplication of effort if the Modlanga Commission of Inquiry is required to produce a prima facie case against Uncle Tom Cobley and all in relation to the Mkhwanazi revelations. So we don't know at this stage because the propriety, the constitutionality of appointing Modlanga has been called into question, and as has the triple header Minister of Police arrangement where you have the actual minister on garden leave, you have the acting minister standing in for another acting minister who's not available because he's busy winding up his affairs as a professor at Wits.
That's wound up by tomorrow. I think it's his first day. He said from the 1st of August he'll be available. So he can get a salary back to back with his university salary. And he also produced a document, from what I understand. Professor Kachalia has produced a document about policing and about what's wrong with the police force and sent it to the presidency about a year ago, maybe longer.
Got lost on the president's desk and it's never been released publicly. I've seen it, but it hasn't been released publicly.
It's a weird setup. So where do we go from here? We've got literally a few minutes and I have to then wind up. But where do we go from here now? Where do you think? Let's look into your crystal ball.
My guess is that this litigation that was waged this week in the Constitutional Court will be lost in the Constitutional Court by the MK party and Jacob Zuma, but they will not be deterred by that. They will reappear at the High Court and say, we want the same relief again. They'll probably patch up some of the holes and some of the omissions in their case, which have been revealed by the argument that was held in the Constitutional Court. And there will be ongoing litigation about that. The Ad Hoc Committee of Parliament, if it can persuade Mkhwanazi that he shouldn't keep his powder dry for a commission which may or may not happen, but should speak to the ad hoc committee about what his problems are.
And hand over his
evidence. Could be a source of great information about, where all of this is going. But essentially what needs to happen is that the political will to implement the Glenister decision of 2011, the body outside executive control that is STIRS compliant, that's what needs to come out of this whole performance. And if that does come out of it, then Glenister's bills will be on the inside track because they are STIRS compliant. They do comply with the constitutionality requirements of the Glenister decision, and a new institution that is free of executive control, consisting of people who do not feel beholden to political bosses but feel beholden to the rule of law, will be put in charge of anti-corruption work in South Africa.
Now with that statement, and I wish much strength to your arm, because I know you're going to be writing a lot over the next few weeks and you're going to be pushing. I know that we've reached the witching hour of our program. I want to thank you most profusely again for appearing on Chai FM. It's really a pleasure having you as a guest, and it clears up a lot of the murkiness for me, and I hope some of our listeners as well. So thank you, Advocate Paul Hoffman, SC, Accountability Now, author of many books. I really thank you for spending your time with us this evening. I really appreciate it. Thank you very much.
You're welcome, Michael. Let me just remind you that there's another book called Under the Swinging Arch. If you Google Under the Swinging Arch, you'll get the whole Glenister story in one book. You didn't mention that when you were singing my authorship.
Sorry about that. Thank you.
It's not okay. Mine. Don't worry. I just compiled it.
Thank you.
Okay.
Keep well. Thank you.
Thanks for the opportunity. Cheers.
Pleasure.
There we go.